Okay, we'll start. Okay, well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for coming to our regular scheduled meeting. It's 7 o'clock on January 12th. I'd ask the clerk to take the roll call.
Trustee Cascatello?
Here.
Trustee Bachner?
Here.
Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
Trustee Gillis?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
President Odusi?
Here. Okay, if I could ask everyone to please stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, right. All right, well, before we get into the, thanks. Okay, the meat of the agenda, we have a great opportunity to recognize Fenwick for its state championship. We have the coach here with us, Matt Pataglia. Thank you very much. And it looks like, a player. And a resident. Okay, very good. Well, congratulations. We have a proclamation here, but I want to just kind of sum it up. You know, tonight we are proud to recognize an outstanding achievement by Fenwick High School and its football program. Fenwick has long been an important part of the village of River Forest, with strong ties through its students, families, alumni, and contributions to the community. On December 2nd, the Fenwick football team competed in the IHSA Class 6A State Championship game against a formidable partner, East St. Louis program. The Friars rose to the occasion, delivering a determined and disciplined performance that resulted in a 38-28 victory and the second state championship in program history. Throughout the game, the team took advantage of early opportunities, responded to momentum shifts, and remained focused from start to finish. Key defensive stops, timely scoring drives, and strong leadership on and off the field defined this championship performance and inspired supporters across the community. This achievement reflects the dedication of the student athletes, coaches, and school staff who worked tirelessly throughout the season. So on behalf of the Village of River Forest, our Board of Trustees, our staff, and all of the residents, congratulations to the Fenwick Friars on an exceptional season and a well-deserved state championship. Yay.
I'm Abe Williams. Right, Fenwick.
Yeah. Lives down the street.
Yeah, I live right down the street over there. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Start to finish. Great. Never gave up.
Yeah, we never did. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, unlike the Bears, we actually had the lead most of the time.
Yeah.
No, thank you. This is again way too much, means a lot. We spend obviously a lot of time in River Forest practicing, long hours at the Priory just down the street. So, you know, we are really fortunate to have great neighbors and be great residents of this town, and really appreciate the recognition for a lot of the hard work that these kids put in daily. We got a couple more players strolling in late. Come on, Adam. Adam, introduce yourself to the town hall.
How you guys doing? I'm Adam Cogden, left guard.
Okay. You look like a left guard.
Nice. Adam's also a wrestler. Aiden's also a track and field athlete.
Yeah.
Runs the hurdles.
Right.
So a lot of multi-sport athletes and a lot of local kids. A lot of our kids couldn't make it tonight. Basketball practice and other activities. But no, we greatly appreciate this and want to bring more than just a couple we've gotten so far. So thank you very much.
Well, congratulations. You know, we have alumni at our table too.
I was just going to say, I was, so first of all, congratulations. I was at Fenwick when Tony Lawless was still around, Dan O'Brien, Ed Galvin, some great coaches, and you're carrying on their tradition. We're proud of you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations.
Go Friars.
Yeah, go Friars. Good stuff. All right. Okay, I think somebody else is just with this. I know we're going to go into the CIP, but I just want to make sure we capture that. I mean, bond, right? Sorry, thanks. Okay. Okay, well, he's doing that. Okay, we'll go on into our public hearing. So, thanks.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay. General, if you need to say anything.
All right. Tonight we'll be holding a public hearing about bond issue. So I just have a statement to read, and then we'll open up for any comments specifically about the bond issue. There will be additional public comment section as the next agenda item. This hearing will come to order. Let the record reflect that this is a public hearing being held pursuant to the requirements of sections 10 and 20 of the Bond Issue Notification Act of the State of Illinois, as amended. Notice of this hearing was published on December 29th, 2025 in the Chicago Tribune, a newspaper of general circulation in the village. This is a hearing regarding a plan to issue not to exceed $600,000 in aggregate principal amount of the village's bonds. The proceeds of the bonds will be used to pay for public infrastructure projects within the village and certain costs of issuance of the bonds. The bonds will be issued by the village in accordance with the provisions of Section 15 of the Local Government Debt Reform Act of the State of Illinois, as amended, and shall constitute a general obligation of the village, payable from non-referendum bond proceeds in accordance with provisions of Section 8516 of the Municipal Code, which will not exceed 0.5% of the assessed value of all taxable property located within the village. This public hearing is required by Sections 10 and 20 of the Bond Issue Notification Act. At the time and place set for the hearing, residents, taxpayers, and other interested persons will be given the opportunity to express their views for or against the proposed plan of financing, the issuance of the bonds, and the purpose of the issuance of the bonds. So at this time, if there are any public comments regarding the bond issue, this would be the time to address the village board.
Okay. Hearing none.
Okay. Hearing none, we will close the public hearing. And then at the next village board meeting, we'll come back for approval of the bond issue formally.
Okay, very good. So we're moving on to citizens' comments. So is Mark hosting?
Good evening, son. Congratulations to Fenwick, and thank you for helping out those of us with OCD by sending out the leaf pickup. I'm looking forward to having those picked up in front of my house, so thank you. And a request for Public Works, they could hit the areas near the schools when they first go out before the teachers park up all those spaces, might be able to get to that curb line a little faster. The intention of my coming out to speak tonight is clarify some statements and some things that have gone on over the Ethics Board hearing. I am one of the people who was anti-tennis club lights. I've been very obvious about that, but not on how it's been reported back. I have nothing personal against any single person on the review board. The ethics hearing, I thought that the complaint would have been towards the village on how the ethics situation was set up. And I believe the ethics board is going to suggest that the ordinance be reviewed. The ordinance as written sets up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
That recusal should have been made way before. And in my opinion, it should be written that all four of those members shouldn't be allowed to be on that board for hearing of that specific purpose. I think the legal department may have given some bad advice. Not you, sir. You seem to be a lot clearer at the ethics board, but the young lady who is advising the board seemed to be kind of all over the place. And I think you kind of clarified some of that to the last hearing. It needs to be tightened up. There should be no time ever that a citizen such as Elias should be put in a situation where his integrity was called into question. It wasn't his. It's how the board was set up, and that has to not happen again. Going forward, if they were to come back and say they want tennis lights, this shouldn't be an issue again. Any member should recuse themselves from any conversation with that board, whether it be with the members behind closed doors during other topics. Once that's on the table, they're now talking with those board members. That conversation could lead right to the item that's on the agenda. Please do not set up the citizens for failure. These are volunteers. They do a lot for the community. Why I stand on the other side of the issue, I do not want anybody's integrity called out. When I forget the lady who stood up at the hearing, what was the other board member's name? She held up a piece of paper saying, when I got this in the mail, she was a deer in the headlights, and I would have been too in the same situation. She's a citizen volunteer and received that. And I don't believe the ethics people even saw it, because I asked Ross what that was, and he said, I haven't seen that piece of paper yet. That shouldn't happen. And if you guys could tighten up that ordinance as a result of this situation so those things don't happen again, I, as a citizen, would appreciate that. I'd like to have a fair playing field for any applications going forward in the future. So please, let's take that into consideration when you hear the recommendations from the Ethics Board. Thank you for your time.
Okay, Margie.
Margie Seconder, River Oaks Drive. January 5th, the River Forest Ethics Commission considered an ethics complaint against four members of the tennis club who also serve on the DRB. Troubling issues of process and findings exist. The village adopted ethical standards to assure public confidence in the integrity of local government and its effective and fair operation. Covered individuals must be independent in their judgment and actions and must have respect for process and rules. Quote, village covered individuals shall not use their official positions to influence government decisions in which they have an organizational responsibility or personal relationship which may create a conflict of interest or which give the appearance of a conflict of interest. That's quoted from the ethics ordinance. The village president, administrator, village attorney, and the DRB's attorney directed a DRB member to actions that violated our ethics code to advance the RFTC's goals. On November 6th, the DRB member, Elias Yannicki, proposed to the DRB on behalf of the RFTC to install lights on the property, club's property, even though Mr. Houseal had already decided against lights. At the January 5th hearing this year, Mr. Yannicki testified prior to the presentation that staff never directed him against presenting. He stated that in a meeting with President Adusi, he was directed that he didn't need to recuse himself if he had no bias, and guided him on how to present, to start on the dais, move off, then to the podium. Mr. Walsh did not require someone else present to present. Mr. Molina said he didn't know Yannicki was going to present. It would have been better if someone else had. The DRB's attorney advised recusal was optional. Why did village leadership steer the request for the zoning variance to the DRB to begin with and not the ZBA? Chair Pro Tem DeGroff noted at the January 5th hearing an appearance of impropriety, which is a key point, stated it looks bad. She asked Mr. Molina why he didn't include ethics in his direction to the DRB. But on September 9th, the EC recommended staff get signed acknowledgments that all covered individuals received and reviewed a copy of the revised ethics ordinance with a memo summarizing conflicts of interest. When did that occur? The EC determined Yannicki's presenting to the DRB inconsistent with the ethics ordinance. A board member shall not appear before a board on behalf of a third-party private interest. The EC found the complaint not sustained, that is, not dismissed, due to poor village direction and multiple DRB appearances. However, the administrator's summary tonight differs from the EC's. The Board of Trustees, you can reach your own finding to fit these circumstances and address actions that are inconsistent with ethics law. Other behaviors raise serious questions. EC Chair Ignoffa was absent January 5th, but he signed the determination and recommendation. How is that appropriate? On December 2nd, an initial review of the November 9th complaint was held in closed session. Who was in the closed session? A copy of the complaint may be given to the village attorney, administrator, president, and trustees after a determination of reasonableness of the complaint. That's in the ordinance. In 2025, Attorney Molina gave input into the ethics ordinance. Having a consultant who co-write the ordinance, then interpret the ordinance, then argue his points before the EC and the Board of Trustees is undue influence. The ethics commissioners need to rely on their own training, expertise, and independent judgment. The ethics tone is set at the top. There's an unwillingness to follow ethical standards. Behaviors show lax attitudes towards ethics, standards, and processes. The result? Boards and commissions are undercut, trust in village institutions and processes erode, and volunteers decline to serve. River Force must commit to ethical governance by engaging an independent expert to revise the ordinance, clarify roles and processes to increase public trust. With development coming, it's all the more important. Thank you.
Okay. Paul?
First of all, thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. I really appreciate it. My name is Paul Harding. My wife, Cheryl, and I live at 559 Ashland. We've been residents of River Forest for 21 years, and it's a great community. We enjoy the people, and we have the highest respect for village government. We just disagree about this issue. It's a simple thing. But if we disagree with one issue, with village leadership over 21 years, I'd say that's a positive thing because we do have great leadership. So I'm a partner in a Chicago architecture firm. I know a lot about this, the zoning variances. I've personally been responsible for 15 zoning variances, and that's what this is a zoning variance. And I've been involved both for and against. I understand how to do it professionally. I understand the laws, the expectations. I understand the process. So again, thank you for considering my complaint here. I, like 11,000 other residents of River Forest, value the ethics ordinance as it's written. We're grateful for it. It's a great thing. It's important. It's important to all of us. And what's important is as it's written. And I think that's an important distinction because I've sat in these meetings and I've heard the village attorney just basically gut that ethics ordinance with claims about this and that. Well, if his points were so important, why aren't they in the ethics ordinance?
They will be.
But they're not right now, but it's good that they will be. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
So my comments this evening are concerned about the ethics ordinance, not about the lighting, but the lighting is in the background. So I want to go through the background of that. But my concerns are basically, how do we ensure that decisions that impact residential quality of life and reflect and impact property values? The impact of that proposed lighting, even with reduced scheme, reduces property values by 10 to 15%. So in aggregate, it's $3 to $3.5 million that those neighbors are going to take a hit. And I just don't believe that that's what you want. I don't think that's well understood by a village leadership, what a big deal that is to us. We're also concerned about balanced representation. The ethics ordinance talks about balanced representation. The ethics ordinance has key provisions for fairness and equality. It talks about equal treatment for all village residents. And from our perspective, we're not getting that. In that the lighting was rejected at the Priory public athletic fields, public, mind you. It was rejected for the football fields at Concordia, the football field at Concordia. And then yet this tiny private organization, it's not a public organization, it's a private organization. They make up 1.8% of the village. Yet the development review board has 4 out of 7 members. And I'm not saying it was intentional, I'm not saying it, but it's just the optics of it. And part of this is about optics. What does this look like for the village, for village governance and village leadership? We want everybody to look really good, but we also want to be treated fairly. And we feel like we're not being treated fairly, and certainly we're not being heard, or else this thing would have never gotten this far. So like I said, the ethics ordinance requires that officials act impartially without bias and serve all residents equally. And we contend that that's not happening. Maybe it's an oversight, whatever, but it's not happening from our point of view. It requires avoidance of conflict of interest. And very importantly, the appearance of conflict of interest. And that's what we have here. When you have 4 members of the River Forest Tennis Club that are on the development review board, that just appears to the typical resident to be improper. And that's part of this. A village attorney thinks it's just fine for some discombobulated reason that even attorneys question the logic of.
So, Paul, you're already at 5:30. If you can,
okay, all
right. Please help wrap up.
So, anyway, talked about our perspective, the appearance of conflict of interest. So, the other issue has to do with the handout. So, do you have that? Does everybody have the handout? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, item 9 in there talks about the representation of private interests, and basically, what it says. You cannot be on a village board and represent another entity in front of the board. The two are totally incompatible. You can't even recuse yourself the way this is written. And this went on for 14 months that Elias was on that board. He heard all the internal discussion, developed a really good understanding of what everybody was thinking. And then all of a sudden in that November 5th meeting, he magically stands up. He was sitting right here and he says, I recuse myself. What's like, how can you recuse yourself? That's a clear violation of the letter of the ethics ordinance. So what we're asking for, because of the village concern about equality for all residents, that 4 members recuse themselves. So they signed up for that. I was on the Historic Preservation Commission for 3 years. I signed up for that. I agreed to do it. Everybody knows that's part of it, that you may be called upon to recuse yourself. So they recuse themselves. And it's just for like one issue. They can recuse themselves for this issue, and then they can go back to business as usual. And then the other thing, just to be clear, is that I'm fine with the thing.
Hey, Paul, it's 7 minutes. I'm going to have to.
Okay, I'm fine with the complaints being dropped against those members. But the way to fix this, and this would make the village leadership and trustees look really good, would be Elias no longer presents. He had his chance. It violated the ordinance for like 14 months.
Okay, Paul, I'm going to ask you to step away. I mean, it's already now 8.
Okay,
minutes.
Fine. Okay.
I'm just trying to treat everyone equally.
Right. Okay. But anyway, you can dismiss the charges against them, and then you can tune this thing up and make the village look really good in the eyes of 11,000 people and also the neighbors.
Okay.
So
thank you, Paul. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's move on. to the elected officials' comments and announcements. So maybe we could start with Trustee Bachner, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. Happy New Year, everyone. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. And I don't have any other comments this evening.
All right, thank you. Lisa?
I will also say Happy New Year, and I hope that everybody did have a great end of the year holiday. I also am looking forward to a great 2026, working with everybody around this table, working with our commissions and the members of each of those commissions, as well as the residents across our community. Thanks.
Just echo everyone else and wishing, hope that everybody had a safe and enjoyable holiday.
Thanks, Rez.
I have nothing to add other than a Happy New Year.
All right. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks. Just wanted to thank Public Works for doing the extra leaf pickup after it got snowy and cold earlier at the end of last year than normal. And I understand that the pickup was supposed to be today, moving from the south to the north. Is it possible that people in the north who haven't raked out yet might still have a chance to get it out there, or have you guys finished the job?
So no, the job is not finished. The goal was to have everything out this morning so that everything was out for Public Works to do it. It takes more than one day to get through town, so they'll be working through this week. So if anything's out there, please do it as soon as possible. And then our staff will be out there looking to get some piles that are out there too, right on the curb, just to get everything cleared up.
Yeah, great. Well, I think it's really helpful to have it cleaned up because it was slippery and messy and hidden under the snow. So thanks for that. That's all I have.
Thanks, Gabe. Okay. Thanks, Jack. We appreciate it. Happy New Year to everyone. Thank you to our staff and our commissioners and our committed residents for all their public comments. This week, I learned something that really warmed my heart. Evan Sterk, who's a youth in our community, and his dad, Dr. Ethan Sterk, saved a woman, Laura Hart, at November 9th at the Bears game. So thank you to them. Go Bears. And that's the second time this year, or the second time in 12 months at least, that residents have saved lives through their quick thinking and their quick actions. And I'm honored to live amongst you, and I feel very safe knowing that I'm here amongst all these lifesavers. Yeah. The only other thing I have to add is that January is Poverty Awareness Month, and the River Forest Township, along with Lincoln and Willard Elementary School, are putting together a drive to stock the youth hygiene closet at the township for the year. Donate if you can. There's a list of needs on the township website.
First of all, again, want to wish everyone a Happy New Year. Again, congratulations to Fenwick on that that great victory. I want to thank the fire department for their quick action. We had a little fire in our building the other night, and they were right on the spot and got it taken care of. And we're going to talk a little bit more about it at our next meeting because there's some recognition we need to give. So thanks.
Yeah, very good. I have nothing to add. So we'll go just Happy New Year and echo what everybody else said. Thank you, Public Works. Two. Pristine. Yeah. Exceptional, I think I used.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the consent agenda. If I can get a motion to approve the consent agenda A through F, please.
Motion to approve it, consent agenda items A through F.
Second, please.
Second.
Okay, thank you, Megan. Okay, any comments, questions on these items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read out loud each item and take the vote.
Item 7A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, December 15th, 2025. B, Village Board of Trustees executive session meeting minutes, December 15th, 2025. C, administration department report. D, monthly department reports. E, accounts payable, December 2025, $2,046,253.44. F, authorization to donate loss, mislaid, and abandoned property, bicycles ordinance. Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Cascatello?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, we have recommendations of boards and commissions and committees. This is the motion to accept the Ethics Commission's findings and dismissing the complaint against the four DRB members. So if I can get a motion and a second.
Motion to accept the Ethics Commission findings and recommendations dismissing the complaint against the Development Review Board members Fishman, McColl, and Lucchese, and further accepting the Commission's determination that while Mr. Yanaki's presentation before the Development Review Board was inconsistent with the ethics ordinance, the complaint against Mr. Yanaki was not sustained.
Second.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any comments or questions on it? Yeah, I think it's hearing none. Let's.
I would like to talk about this a little bit because we've heard some important comments from residents. The Ethics Commission's findings had to do with the DRB members, but the Ethics Commission's findings also recommended that they take another look at the ethics ordinance. Are we also going to discuss asking the Ethics Commission to do that? Are they waiting to hear back from us to give them the charge to do that?
Take that. Yeah, I think what we should do is obviously prove this tonight and then look to improve as they recommended and to clarify conflict of interest. So, but we're not going to do that tonight. So yes, I think we take that item and put it on the agenda at another time and look at the code. But I think at this point in time, we let the administration and the lawyers look at it and give us advice and counsel on it, because this is the third time we're looking at this ordinance. Mm-hmm. And I think we got to get it right. And it means a lot, because conflicts of interest could be very different. And I understand what all the commenters, especially Paul, what you said, it's easy to say it's a conflict of interest or an appearance of a conflict of interest. I agree. But many of us along this table and maybe even you, Paul, belong to something in the community. I mean, we're a very small community, and we want people engaged in our community. That means they're part of the community in some fashion. I know that some of us are paddle members at the paddle club. Do we not vote on park district stuff? So we have to be real careful when we start thinking about this as where's the boundaries? And so what I like to do is think about that, versus doing a knee-jerk reaction and coming up with some ordinance that doesn't allow anybody to do anything. And then I also want to take into consideration what our village attorney has been advising some of the DRB members. I mean, is membership a conflict? I don't know. We need to discuss that, I think, as a team and as a board. Alone, is membership alone a conflict? If you have financial gains, of course, if there's you can't see something impartially, of course, there's a conflict, but is just a mere membership a conflict?
Or more than just a mere membership, a membership by several people on a board, because I don't want to impugn the integrity of any one of those people.
Right.
I don't think that's what any of the commenters were saying. I think they really want to see a process that everyone feels is fair and is neighborly and does not result in our elementary school teachers getting letters they don't want to receive.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it's embarrassing for all of us. And I don't want to, like I said to somebody, I feel like I'm Jerome Powell. I feel like, we're on a witch hunt for something, or there's a, we got to find some smoking gun. And until we find that smoking gun, we're going to keep pushing. I don't think there's a smoking gun. I think everyone's trying to do their best. I think everyone's trying to do what is right. There's no conspiracy theory. People get on the boards, they stay there. We have no idea if a St. Luke's is going to come with something, or a tennis club is going to come with something, or Fenwick is going to come with something.
We have
no idea.
It will happen.
It's going to happen.
Yes.
We know that. And so
So there's no, oh, let's put all these people on the DRB. It doesn't work that way. So I want to make sure we don't have a knee-jerk reaction to this, and we want to do it right. And we want to make sure that it's proper for everybody, for the 100 commissioners that volunteer their time. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to ask the board, if you're okay, just have us look at, let Lance and Matt look at it and do some research, and then, you know, at some point in time, come back.
I thought that the Ethics Commission is the right place, is the right entity to look at this and come up with a recommendation to us.
I prefer that we do, because we've already done it twice. And the first time it got wrong, the second time it got wrong. And I'm not saying that they're not incapable of doing it. I just think now is our time to take this and make sure that it's right for our community.
Well, the Ethics Commission also looked at it both the same amount of times that we did. And I'm not sure that it was the Ethics Commission's fault that there were issues with it. I think that there were some other parties involved. And so I would welcome the input of the Ethics Commission and I would welcome a recommendation from them. And then, like we've typically done, it comes to our board and we discuss it and we take into consideration what the recommendation is.
I'm not suggesting we not show them what we're coming up with. Of course we would do that. We want their advice and counsel. I'm just saying right now, I think it's important that we think this through. And I don't know if the Ethics Commission, you know, will think it through all throughout, you know, everything that goes on in Riverwalk. So
I think it needs to be a collaborative process. I mean, I believe, you know, we had a former chairperson stand up and, you know, say that, you know, this is the way it should be and everything. I think we need outside legal counsel, and I think we need the ethics board and this board to collaborate and come up with the right thing, because again, you know, this will be our third time, you know, through it, and let's get it right.
So that's what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that we use our legal counsel, use our staff, use the village board, and then use the ethics commission and then come with a final decision.
What are we anticipating that looking like? Who's going to take the first draft? Who's going to come up with a list of items that need to be looked at?
I think I'd ask for you guys.
Can I just clarify a
couple things?
Sorry. Thanks, man. So,
yeah, we
missed something.
Well, let me say.
Down there.
Yeah.
And then I asked myself.
Pass it down. So, one of the issues is that you have to distinguish between the presentation component that Elias dealt with and then the membership. It is absolutely uncontroversial black letter law that being a member of an organization does not create a conflict of interest unless the person, because of that membership, determines they can't judge it on the merits fairly. And the proper thing to do is for them to ask themselves that question. And they have a duty to participate and vote if they don't have a conflict. So if they believe they can apply the rules, their duty is to participate. And their duty, the best way to do that is to announce the connection publicly and then say that they can be fair and that they intend to participate. And that's the advice that was given to these members. Now, the ethics committee, and I don't think you can have a set of rules that varies just because you have more than one person. It's an individual analysis for each person. Now, if they're on the board of directors, that creates a conflict, not because they're less or more likely to be fair or unfair. That could be a person who voted against making the board that wasn't in favor of making the application. It's a structural conflict in that when you are on the board of directors, you are part of what in corporate law we call the control group. You are the group that is the entity. Being a member, like being an employee, is not part of that. So now it's true that the commission was interested in requiring recusal in the exact circumstance I just laid before you. There may be a legal problem with that. Because what you're basically doing is saying, if you're a member of a group, you can't vote. You can't participate if they have an application before you. It's a real problem up here because the elected officials, it goes back to kind of potentially changing the form of government. You're creating disqualifications for individual applications that Illinois state law does not impose, and we're non-home rule. And there are things that I would need to look at before I'd be willing to say, yeah, we could do that. So those are the membership issues.
So I have a membership question. Does membership convey a duty of loyalty to that organization?
No.
No? Just being part of the control group?
You have no ethical duty by being a member. I mean, they may have, you know, you may take a swearing in if you're a member, but legally it's not recognized. The way, you know, like it's...
But a control member would have that duty of loyalty.
That what? Say
a duty of loyalty.
Control member.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But that's not really why, because the control group member may not be in favor of the lights or whatever the issue is. It's structural in that they are the entity, and you can't be asking for permission and voting on it at the same time.
I understand. I guess my other concern is on the other side of the issue, making sure that we're not jeopardizing anyone's 501c3 status by doing this.
I'm just telling you what the...
Yeah, and there are IRS laws that...
I think what the commission may be interested in doing is broadening the requirement to recuse oneself or to disqualify members. And I think that may be an issue for a non-home rule. It may be an issue.
I have a question around that too then. So one of the things that's been talked about and you just said is if members who are part of the DRB, who are also in this case part of the tennis club, they need to check in with themselves to see, can I be unbiased in this? And as a member might be very excited for the lights or very unexcited, you know, one way or another. In this case, if we had these four commissioners say that they did have a bias and maybe wouldn't be able to do that, what are our next steps then for that commission? Do we have enough of a quorum to be able to make that vote?
So we looked at that issue. Go ahead. I'm sorry. So the way it would work, so as a property owner, you have a right to go through the process, right? It's your property right. You can't be effectively denied applying to the board because of a quorum issue. It would go forward as a non-recommendation or be treated as if it had not been recommended, but it would move up to the
board. Okay.
In my opinion.
So we're not going through the
process. Well, we would have to look at the rules. So some boards have varying quorum requirements and so forth. So they would have to comply in order to make a recommendation. They have to comply with the rules that govern them. But if you must have a quorum in order to take any action, then although they could hold a meeting under the Open Meetings Act with a majority of a quorum, it constitutes a quote unquote meeting for purposes of the act. It wouldn't be a legal meeting under the code of River Forest if that requires an absolute quorum. But you can mess with how quorums are counted. And we never needed to look at that in this case because it was determined that the three stated to Matt that they were able to participate fairly and they agreed that they would do that,
right?
So that it wasn't an issue.
So,
but we would look at that.
Okay. So to just clarify for myself, then the other members of the board could hold a meeting on the issue, maybe even discuss the issue, provide thoughts. But at the end of that, it would come to our board as non-recommended.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Between DRB and us, there's nothing.
No.
Right.
Oh, you mean
like another level? No.
A level? No. No.
And just so we clarify this, it would never have gone to the zoning board. It was always going to the development review board because it's a planned development, right, ma'am?
Well, yeah, it's a planned. Yeah. So we had this discussion. I know, you know, the tennis club had very competent counsel as well. And, you know, this was fairly a planned development in my opinion. That's where it is. So planned developments they have a unique zoning status because they're kind of like quote unquote legal spot zoning. They're a specific set of what you can do on a property within a zoning district that you can vary the rules for the public benefit, but they have specific rules that apply to that site. So normally when a lot is governed by a plan development, any changes to what happens on that lot is an amendment to the plan development ordinance, which governs that property. So that's why that proceeded that way. And as far as the presenter goes, you know, the commission felt that Elias should not have presented, right? And that would have been better. But if you look at number nine, I just want to point out something. So number nine, it talks about how covered individuals, which we all are, they shall not appear on behalf of private interests of third parties before any board or commission. Now, that kind of rule is covered by the common law, and it typically applies to situations where you have people, they have businesses in town. Let's say an attorney has a practice in town, an architect, and they sit on, let's say, the village board. They can take clients within the village, but they shouldn't be the one to present. It should be someone else in the firm, or they shouldn't take it, because it just looks like they're presenting, you know, they're trying to convince you, and they sit on your board. That's what that's designed for. There's an exception. The prohibition shall not prohibit a village covered individual contractor from appearing on their own behalf. I just want to point out that Elias is kind of in the middle. He's sort of a third party, but he's part of the group. You know, it's not like he was hired to present and he's on the board. Now, I think the prudent thing, and that's why I said, I think it would have been better had he not. But if just so you see that it's not crystal clear, in my opinion, on that one. But
and just to state, he had stated that he had not received that advice prior to the November 5th meeting, correct?
And that is correct.
Yeah. And I did not believe, at least in the November, he was going to represent. When I heard that, I was surprised.
Yep.
So I don't know how that happened. But be that as it may, that's my view of this provision. And so
I have another question. What are we to do with the language in the ethics ordinance that says that village covered individuals have to abide by the letter and the spirit of the law and avoid even the appearance of impropriety? So you've said, you know, the code has some specific things in it that you cannot do. And then it says that village covered individuals can choose to recuse themselves if they think that they have some interest. But what are we, a couple of the residents mentioned, well, four people on the DRB who are tennis club members is too much. One, maybe they're saying that is the appearance of impropriety. What do you think about that?
The appearance of impropriety standards are sort of recognized as operating under the provisions that I've described, which is that it could appear that if you're a member of a group that well, what about that? And as long as you actually do the work to say, this is coming before me, I'm a member, can I do this? And you can, fairly applying the rules, you deal with the appearance, certainly not to the satisfaction of everyone, right? You always have people who will say, oh, the fix is in. You always will. You're never going to please everybody. But the way the law deals with it is if you disclose what the potential appearance is, you announce that you can apply the rules and you can be fair, then you can vote. I mean, an example is you have, I deal with another village, and the mayor there has a son that's on the police force. And he has stated that he will not recuse himself if he's called upon to vote for collective bargaining matters, because he can watch out for the public, what's good for the public, and it's got nothing to do with his adult son. Now, there are people that don't believe that. I know there aren't, and wish that that's not the case. But the point is the law does not forbid that. But you will find people, even when the law is complied with, that aren't happy with it or don't like the way it quote unquote looks.
Right.
So that's how I would deal with that. I mean, you'd have to be specific to go beyond the common law. And you also, in my opinion, because this ethics commission, this is it's a claim of misconduct, basically, when you do this. You can't be judging what appears to be impropriety after the fact. It has to be clear up front. And the rules up front are, if you're a mere member, you've got to do the work. You've got to determine whether you can apply the rules. And, you know, some people don't want to vote if they're a member, and they do have an out because no one's going to question if they say, you know, I'm a member and I don't think I can judge this properly. No one's going to second guess you. And in fact, it's more likely that that's probably going to happen than going forward, especially if it's controversial, because they may get questions from the membership. What if they vote against? What if they vote for? But you have a duty to do that if you can apply the rules.
You can see, I mean, it's not an easy task, but it's an important one. And so that's why I recommend that we work collaboratively with the Ethics Commission, but we work with them, help them through what, as they asked, we need to improve it or clarify it. So that's what I'm going to recommend. I'm going to ask these our staff and Lance to work with the Ethics Commission, and we'll get that cleared, and then come back to us, and we'll discuss it and hopefully vote on it and make it clearer for everybody. So that's what I'm.
So just so I understand, the recommendation from you, Kathy, is that Lance and staff and the Ethics Commission work together to come up with some proposed revisions to the existing code.
I mean, we're going to work with them. We're going to come up with some, and then
the commission, when we left, was expecting me potentially, again, given whatever the board did when it got up here, obviously, to give them what their parameters might be as far as a method.
So that's what we're going to do. But I want to come back to us so that
it would have to.
Yeah, no, yeah. Before it's even agreed to with the ethics. I want to make sure we agree so that we understand it, and we understand it clearly, and then the Ethics Commission can deliver it. I think that's what they really want. They want us to help them. So it will come back. We promise we'll get this cleared up and improved.
In the meantime, can we be a little more proactive with our commissioners so that we don't run into this again? I know that this was really hard on them. And just make sure that as we're sorting this out, we're doing a little more handholding if they're experiencing things where there could be a conflict of interest.
I agree with you, Megan. I think Matt did a yeoman's job trying to help, really did. I think it got heightened with a lot of discussion, of course, the Wednesday Journal article. And I just think that was unfortunate because it never got to a point of even, you know, they were just trying to find a date to meet. So, but you're right. I mean, it's just, we need to do more. And I think that was a lesson probably learned, but Matt and team really, really tried to work with everybody. And like you said, we're never going to get 100% people. I mean, that's going to like what we do, but that's okay too. All right. So I'd like to take a vote if you don't mind, because got a lot more work to do. So thank you.
Okay. Item 9A, Ethics Commission. Review and acceptance of Ethics Commission recommendation to dismiss complaint against Development Review Board members Fishman, Lucchese, McColl, and Yanaki. Trustee Bachner.
No, that's not the motion that I...
Oh, yes.
Okay. That's a good
idea. You're right.
Yeah. Do you have that motion? But that was a better one, actually.
Do you want me to just read the motion again for you? Okay. Motion to accept the Ethics Commission's findings and recommendation dismissing the complaint against the Development Review Board members Fishman, McColl, and Lucchese, and further accepting the Commission's determination that while member Yanaki's presentation before the Development Review Board was inconsistent with the ethics ordinance, the complaint against member Yanaki was not sustained.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
No, that was what was motioned.
Well, there was someone that seconded earlier.
Yeah, I had seconded.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it is complete. It is different from what.
Just reminding everyone what it was. It was seconded.
Unless somebody has a problem.
I can't.
That's the motion.
We should make sure that everybody has the same information.
Yeah, I don't have that. Where did that come from?
That's
you just made
my motion.
Your motion. Gotcha.
Okay. A lot of that was from the determination from the Ethics Commission document that was in there.
It was in
there. In the packet.
That's how it reads, the recommendation.
Well, okay. And I'm not going to reread it because I don't have that verb.
That's fine. So I just want to make sure. So we've got a motion and a second. And
yeah,
I don't want to know here. So I just want to make sure everybody is good with the language. Okay.
Okay. So, Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Gillis?
Yes, and I want to thank Fishman, Lucchese, McColl, and Yaki for their service.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Cascatello?
Yes, and I echo Lisa's statements. Thank you very much.
Okay, we got Bob. Okay, very good. Again, thank you to all of our commissioners who work tirelessly on behalf of us. So let's move on to the presentation of the draft capital improvement plan.
Thanks, Luke. All right. Good evening, Village Board. Tonight is our annual presentation of the proposed capital improvement plan. This is a preliminary presentation. There's no formal action or vote expected of the Village Board tonight. The formal vote adopting the capital improvement plan will come when the budget is presented this spring. But this is an opportunity for the board to ask questions about what our priorities are, and provide feedback on projects and purchases, and gives an opportunity for village staff to present some of those items. The document that was circulated and is available on our village website is chock full with information about the equipment and vehicles and infrastructure projects. Includes a lot of information about vehicle expenses and the rationale behind some of those decisions. So I hope that everyone had an opportunity to review. So this is just kind of an overview of that document with a particular focus on the purchases that are proposed for fiscal year 2027. The capital improvement plan includes 5 years. It helps us plan ahead and make sure money's saved up for purchases. It's also a requirement of the Government Finance Officers Association Award. And in fact, this past year, the village received special recognition about the capital planning piece of the document. And like I said earlier, there's no vote expected tonight. And almost every item in the capital improvement plan will need to come back before the village board because of the significance of the purchase. Any purchases or projects over $20,000 require village board approval. So there might be one or two things in here that would be staff oriented, but we'll go through those as well. And feel free to ask any questions throughout the presentation or after the fact. We'll be tweaking this over the next couple months as we get more exact pricing and see how our preliminary budget numbers are coming in. And any of those changes to the CIP will come back we'll make sure to highlight those when the budget presentation happens in a few months. So this is just overview of a lot of the terms. We're government, so we love our acronyms. And this is throughout the document, a lot of these will be used. I'll probably refer to them in shorthand. The ones that probably matter the most for tonight are the CIF, our Capital Improvement Fund, which is a dedicated subfund of the general fund that is funded by ambulance billing and grants and also red light camera funds. And then SURF, which is a capital equipment replacement fund. The village sets aside money to replace equipment that's already been purchased based on the replacement schedule that is spelled out. And money is transferred from the general fund into the SURF on an annual basis in order to make sure that is properly funded. So the plan is divided into six categories. We'll go through them in this order. Buildings and improvements. These are projects that are scheduled for fiscal year 2027. Several of them we've highlighted before. A lot of them are taking place right here at Village Hall. A bulk of Village Hall is approaching 30 years, and there's a lot of things that have seen better days as we've been making improvements to various sections of Village Hall here. Improvements to the ventilation system and the firing range in the police department, replacing our emergency generator and HVAC unit, and also a monitoring system for our HVAC system. We've had some persistent issues with our air conditioning and heating over the past year or two, so that monitoring system will allow us to be better notified instead of relying on the midnight shift of police to let us know when the system is failing at 3 a.m. on the weekend, which seems to be the case every time. Then upgrades to the firehouse bunk room where our firefighters, paramedics sleep. The men's locker room renovation this year, and we're just wrapping up right now the women's locker room renovation for the police department. That should be done any day now. Some minor improvements to the public works garage, and then a solar installation. That project is already approved by the village board and will probably be completed shortly after the fiscal year. So this is the carryover funds for that project at the public works garage on Forest Avenue. And I should mention here that staff has been discussing some other building improvement projects that we're looking at. There's a lot of flooring and wall, just kind of wear and tear that the village is looking at. We're trying to kind of holistically plan that going forward. So there might be some revisions to this document in advance of the budget to incorporate some of those changes. Right. The next section is vehicles. All right. This year we have two police vehicles scheduled for replacement. One of those is a marked unit, and one of those is an unmarked unit. And the budget numbers for these include all of the fixings, all the lighting, and other equipment that needs to go on them, and the labeling.
Quick question for vehicles in general. When it comes to like insurance and those items of cost, where do those costs land?
So we're members of IRMA, which is our insurance provider. So that's incorporated into our operating budget on those kind of things. So the general premium cost for those would be included there. But then there's sections in the operating budget about any repairs or items like that. Often, if there is damage to a vehicle, we'll get reimbursed from our insurance provider on those.
Okay, so different budget. Thanks.
And then we have probably among the more significant changes in the CIP, we had proposed a light rescue vehicle for the fire department. It was originally budgeted for 2029, I believe, but in some conversations with the fire department that I'll let Chief Gartner explain a little bit more in detail, we believe that this is a purchase that should be made sooner rather than later, but I'll let Chief Gartner explain a little bit about this piece.
Good evening, everybody. As all you are aware, we're getting the ladder truck replaced. We placed that order 2 years ago now, and we're still scheduled to receive the new Quint in November of 2027. So that's still on schedule. So some of the conversations we've had with Matt were, since we're replacing the Quint, we're going to be losing three other vehicles. So we're going to lose the current truck we have, the reserve engine that we have, and a pickup truck with this proposal. So what we're putting out there is it's called a light rescue vehicle. It's basically a heavy duty pickup body, pickup chassis with a box on the back. I believe there's a picture of it in the plan. I've got one here. Just kind of looks like.
Can you send us to a page to look at?
It's page 155 of the PDF.
Yeah, it looks like this. It's so the intent is, with the high maintenance costs for the truck and the engine, those costs will go away. The maintenance cost on this vehicle is extremely, extremely less. It's basically, like I said, it's maintaining a pickup truck chassis. And this will allow us to respond on other non-emergent calls that we would normally respond with the new $1.8 million vehicle, where this vehicle could go on some non-emergent calls, such as person locked out of their car, locked out of their house, things in that nature. Also met lift assists at the assisted living, or things like that. The person has got an odor in their house, they don't know what it is. So instead of constantly the wear and tear, putting that wear and tear on this $1.8 million vehicle, this vehicle would respond in its place. This also gives us the capability of that we don't have presently, which is the carry specialized rescue equipment. We're going full force in getting our guys trained up in water rescue due to the obvious river that we have that runs right through town. We need a place to carry that equipment, and this would be the place that would go, that we could get it there quickly and easily. This vehicle also let us to tote some of the trailers that we have in our Mavis division that carry specialized rescue equipment on it as well, our hazmat equipment, rope rescue equipment. So this just gives us more versatility and more efficiency. It should drive our maintenance costs down exponentially, because, like I said, the maintenance on this, there's no pump on it, there's nothing like that. So it's basically just taking care of a heavy duty pickup truck body, but it gives us a lot of other options and makes us more efficient overall.
So according to what you're saying, there are sometimes, and maybe a lot of times, where this rescue vehicle would go out instead of the other larger vehicle. Correct. But there are some times where both of them would be
correct.
Going out too.
Okay. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So. Mm. Yep. So that is that. I don't know if anybody has any other questions.
What's the year that you're wanting to?
2027. Fiscal year coming up.
And part of the consideration here would be declaring the truck surplus. We expect that we can get a significant amount of money. Most of the time when we declare surplus vehicles, we get a marginal amount for them. But because of the demand and the long lead times for fire vehicles, mm-hmm. we expect that the sale price of the vehicle that we'd be replacing with this to be pretty close to the amount that we'd be looking at here. So we would be considering bringing this back to the board for formal approval after finalizing some of the quotes here within the next few months, because the lead time, we wouldn't get it until fiscal year 27. And that would the truck that Chief mentioned, we've spent over $100,000 in repairs over the past few years on that vehicle alone. So we would like to stop doing that. So that would help. The sooner we were able to get this and get that off the street, we would save costs on that repairs.
Chief. On here, it says it's a 2025 vehicle. So they basically take a truck from this year and start building what you need on it, or
get those quotes. We found two places that have our vehicles in stock that they will hold for us. So there are 26s.
Okay.
But they're already pre-built, and actually we found some that cost cost.
Okay.
Okay. Right, moving on to public works vehicles. The aerial truck, that's the lift truck that we use for tree trimming. The village board approved that purchase already, and we expect to receive that in late summer, early fall, and then just another pickup truck. This is a replacement of a truck in the fleet. And that is it for vehicles. Yes.
I have a question just because we talked about the police are going to look heavily at EV. Are we doing the same here when it's a pickup truck?
So not for this vehicle. The pickup truck and some of the more heavy duty equipment, the electric vehicle versions of those don't have the towing capacity that we would need for those kind of frontline pickup trucks. Now we've identified a few vehicles that will be replaced by electric vehicles, pending approval, of course. And that was confirmed by, we had ComEd come and do a fleet assessment. One of those was the first one that the village purchased was a detective tech vehicle for the police department, our code enforcement vehicle, and then our customer or community service officer vehicle, and also our public works like engineering vehicle. It's like a Ford Transit van you see around town. Those are the vehicles that we'd be looking to replace with electric vehicles next. And moving on to...
I have a question. back to vehicles. So after those vehicles that you've discussed in the packet, you also list like the dump trucks and items. So like for one of these dump trucks, number 40, you have fiscal year 2028. Does that mean you're looking to replace that in 2 years then, or?
Correct. So that's what that schedule would mean, that we would want to take receipt of that vehicle in 2028. So there might be a scenario where we are approving that in fiscal year 27, but the how this is structured is that when we take receipt, that's when we pay for the vehicle, and that's the year that is selected on there. So for the lift truck for the public works, we purchased that technically in fiscal year 2026 that we're in, and we won't receive it till fiscal year 2027.
Okay. I wanted to make sure because in the packet, we also have the maintenance performed on it. So I wasn't sure if we were looking at something new or something older. So I just wanted to clarify that.
And some of that scheduling is subject to change depending on if there is a significant maintenance or repair needed on it, or as we continue to check our quotes on these vehicles, we'll look to also check on the lead time for those vehicles to make sure that we're replacing them properly. Now, on the flip side, we also have a lot of effort in deferring vehicles. So as long as the vehicle that's being replaced is still working fine and the maintenance costs are not significant, then we continue to kind of ride those vehicles as long as we can. And there's a list at the end of the couple things that we've been deferring for some time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Equipment. I won't roll through all of these items here, but I do want to highlight a few of them. We discussed a little bit about life-saving earlier tonight in the compression system 2 there. That is the second Lucas device. That is a automatic CPR compression machine. The village purchased one a few years ago, and it's already been used several times to great effect and life-saving effect here. So this would allow us to have two vehicles carrying that system. A wing plow at the bottom, that is something that's been recently considered for the village. This would be an additional plow on a vehicle that would allow us to plow more quickly. Public Works staff went and visited another municipality to take a look on how that works. So this would be a purchase of one wing plow. So that's not the vehicle, that's just the actual plow on the side that would allow us to service streets in half the time. And we want to kind of dip our toes into it with this one And if it works well, then we'll consider equipping the more of the fleet with wing plow.
I had a question with the wing plow. So in the picture, it looked like it's basically a wing on the side, on both sides of the truck. So does that kind of span the whole width of the street?
There's a variety of models. The one that we've looked at most closely, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jack, would be just a plow on one side. So that you'd have the plow at the front and the plow on the side kind of working together to plow the street. So instead of going, you could do the whole street in one fell swoop.
But generally, the way that we conduct it now on the side streets, you go two cars at a time to be able to get half the street. Mm-hmm. And you come back and get the other half with two cars. With the wing plow, the effect would be you have one truck going that could take the half the street and then do the other half.
Okay.
Basically cutting your people at hand.
Okay. I was just concerned because it looked like there were two, and I'm like, if you're covering the whole street, what do you do if there's a car parked? So that's what I was worried about. Okay, thanks.
Okay, and then the rest of these equipment items are all replacements of existing equipment.
So Matt, just to make sure I'm getting this right, the street camera system isn't adding additional cameras. It's just maintenance and repair for the 243.
Correct. So that would be, there's a couple different pieces of that, but that does not add any new street cameras. That would be replacing existing and also the
software
and the server that's located here to store the footage and make sure those operate. So that is no new cameras in that case. And I'll point out here on the funding, the cameras that are within the North Avenue or Madison Street TIF districts, we charge the funds to those funds. That there's only a handful of eligible projects in here that would apply there. IT, this year, the only thing would just be our typical PC replacement program. To kind of make sure we're not getting too far behind. And then a bulk of the CIP are infrastructure projects kind of managed by Public Works. We divide them here into two kind of sections, one streets and one sewer and water. We'll not go through all of them. A lot of these are just yearly projects that we do to maintain roads, but there are a couple that I want to highlight. Sidewalk, curb, and gutter. The last few years, we've begun funding this at a level of $250,000 per year. Previously, we were funding it at $65,000 a year. This has allowed us to replace a lot more locations throughout the community, and this also includes some of the excess ADA compliant intersections that you see with the kind of pink bumps at crosswalks, and the infrastructure bond that we discussed earlier with the public hearing that will help fund this kind of expansion of sidewalk replacement. Street improvement program, that's our resurfacing. Those are the stretches of streets that are due for resurfacing fiscal year 2027. And the Harlem Avenue Bridge Viaduct, that is the, we're still working on the phase one engineering study for the.
Yeah, man, I've got a quick question since it's a bridge. Does bridge work? Since I know we don't own any bridges, but like painting of bridges, I know we painted some along Central Avenue, is it correct? I think Viaduct. Would that be in this kind of category?
It could be. Yes. So most of the painting that's been done in the past has been by volunteers.
The bridge itself, not the. I mean, you know, the painting that it looks rusty right now. I know the one.
Oh, you mean like with under the?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, the Viaduct. I mean, yeah, the bridge itself. That goes over the streets.
Understood. Yes. Okay. That hadn't really been considered here because we don't own mm-hmm. that property.
Yeah, but I know we painted
the one on, is it Central that goes?
Did we paint the bridge or did we paint under?
No, we painted the bridge.
Okay. That's Union Pacific. The other rusty ones are Canadian National, you say? Yeah.
I know we did it one time because it was so bad. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
maybe
really
we
possible.
Built that.
There might
have,
it might not have been done with work.
The engineering study, though, has to be completed in order to receive federal funding for repairing that bridge. So I want to make sure that it's very clear, like, why Matt's allocated the money for that.
Right. And this project has already been, this engineering piece has already been approved by the village board and funded by a state grant, at least the engineering piece of it. But yes, that would be needed for any improvements going forward. But in lieu of more significant costs, painting and aesthetic and lighting improvements of those would go a long way. So that's something we can look into.
Yeah. Build them back.
street projects that are contingent. So traffic signals, traffic control installations, and Heritage Square. Q review why those are contingent.
Sure. So for the traffic control installations, that refers to Washington, this phase two engineering for Washington Boulevard project and the construction of the Lake Street crossing. Both of those projects were seeking grant funding for. We will, and it's also contingent on approval. Most of the time we're talking about funding. The Washington Boulevard corridor, we had an open house for our phase one engineering. We'll be coming back in the spring to host a second open house to complete that phase one engineering. And we've applied for a few grants for the Lake Street crossing improvements, including flashing beacon at Lake and Franklin. And then in terms of Heritage Square, there's also some other grant funding that we've been made aware of that would help. And I should take a step back. Heritage Square is the working name for the open space here across the street at the Lake and Park parking lot. So this includes money for the what we would describe as kind of a phase one of creating that open space, kind of more simple project to have seating, benching, some landscaping, and getting rid of all the asphalt and the making sure that's.
So may I just following up with what Trustee Bachner said, it's contingent on if we get the grants. But if we don't get the grants, these are still needed. I guess is that your question? It would be my question. So
sure. So we've got there's recommended, contingent, and I forget what the third category is.
Critical.
So that's the order of importance. Critical would be something that immediate.
Now.
So contingent is just kind of our way of stating it's the lesser important of the projects. Not to say they aren't important, but if we had to prioritize funding, that would be the consideration there.
Matt, do we have the right description under the last bullet, the Des Plaines River Trail? It's from North Avenue to Madison, isn't it? Along Thatcher? It's not from from Thatcher to Harlem, is it?
Correct. Yes. That was just left from the past project for the North Avenue streetscape project. So thank you. Correct. Yes, the Des Plaines River Trail, that would be running from North Avenue down to Madison Street. So that
along Thatcher.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I like to think that hopefully we'll get some of these because these are, in my mind, important projects.
For the traffic control installations, can you review where that project is at and status?
So there are four different locations that have been highlighted because of community feedback and also traffic count, traffic speed, and accident data. So the village had an engineer worked on designs that have been submitted to IDOT for review. That was submitted in November, I believe, and we're waiting for feedback and hopeful approval on those projects. So that's where we're at currently with that. There was discussion when this had come up previously about what the backup plan would be if there was to not be approval. We're waiting for that feedback before opening up that conversation of potentially seeking that jurisdictional transfer. There had been some productive conversations back and forth with the IDOT review team on those designs. So we're cautiously optimistic that that would be approved.
Okay, thanks.
And then the other thing here, another increase here is the thermoplastic striping. That is the striping on the street that we've bumped up that amount to in response to concerns about speeding and the like. Striping actually does help reduce speeding, as surprising as that might be. So we had a more aggressive round of striping this past year, and we want to keep that up. So that's why that number is at $25,000. And then the last section is our water and sewer section. A lot of these are ongoing programs and projects to maintain our system. There's not a lot of changes here. One thing to note would be kind of routine projects, sewer lining, helping make sure our systems are maintained. One change here from past capital improvement plans would be the underground reservoir improvement over at the pump house. We previously had budgeted a replacement of one of the pumps at the pump house, but we've had an inspection from engineering firm come out to test the pump and look at the reservoir, and have the condition of the pump allows us to defer that project a few years out. But these are recommended projects that are critical projects, I believe we've got them spelled out as, to improve the underground reservoir. And that is currently out to bid right now. We'll come back to the village board probably in February.
So improvements are, you're asking for a budget of $235,000 there for fiscal year 2026. Out of curiosity, what is ballpark for a new reservoir?
Much more than that.
I'm assuming so.
I would say we're closer to the, I would say, upwards of tens of millions of dollars. This program for the underground reservoir improvements, we're talking about, you know, just minor improvements here and there. We do inspect our reservoir every 5 years, every 10 years. And each time it's come back pristine condition. So we know that it's been, you know, it's in good condition. We just have to make sure that we keep up with all regular improvements. So this project, as Matt mentioned, we had the pump there previously. We did an inspection. It was recommended that we can defer the pump, but we should do the reservoir improvements to make sure that we're keeping along.
And as important are the, as this project is, I would say generally the inspections have indicated that the reservoir is in great condition. It was very well made. You know, there's other municipalities nearby that are having significant issues with their water reservoir. We're not in that case.
Couple of years. When should we be expecting this $10 million?
No. So that's what we're going to keep doing, the 5-10 year inspections. The concrete is showing no signs of like significant degradation to the point where we should start considering replacement. So we're not even there in terms of discussing that we should plan. You know, I can't say that, you know, we're good for the next 150 years. But at this point, by keeping up with our regular inspection cycle, the concrete reservoirs are not showing any degradation.
So you're thinking 10, 20 years?
Yes.
Okay. A couple of years was...
No, I'm sorry. A couple of decades would be more. Yes, that's not on our radar as of now, but that's why we do the inspections. If somehow that was to worsen or there would be other failures along the water system that could somehow be tied to the the pumps and the reservoir, we would have that conversation with that. To highlight the water main replacement project here, there's every 10 years or so we do a full water system survey that indicates recommended projects. The project that we did up on the Priory campus to help with water pressure up in the northeast corner of town was one of the other suggestions here. This is water main replacement for a several block stretch on Franklin Avenue. That's an older water main. So that needs to be replaced. It will be largely funded by a state grant. We received a $750,000 grant for infrastructure improvements that will be applied to this project.
Do we know if that's a lead main?
So the main itself is not lead, but as part of the project, as required by the EPA, all the services that are connected to that stretch of water main that are lead would need to be replaced.
Okay.
The main itself is cast iron.
Okay. So, but making sure that the neighbors who would be impacted are given significant notice what they need to do to replace their service lines.
As part of the replacement project, because as Matt mentioned, there are lead lines on the water main, we'll have to follow proper protocols in terms of notification, the process or time for replacement, and any filtering requirements after.
And although it's not in fiscal year 27, I'd like to put on the radar, the next water main replacement that we have, including the CIP, would be the replacement of a several block stretch of Keystone Avenue's water main replacement. That increased in priority because we had a few years, or I think four water main breaks in a 2-year stretch. So that is the project that we're beginning design work on this year, or in fiscal year 27, to replace that water main. And we've made some other improvements to that water main to give us more control to limit the impact if that were to happen again. And then here, the lead service line replacement subsidy program. That is a program, the Get the Lead Out program, that we offer to residents to split the cost of the lead service line replacement. This is an increase from $150,000 to $200,000 because of the increased demand to replace lead service lines. Since with all of our communications and of having folks do the survey and sending out notices about their material has kind of driven up the interest in that program. So we have increased that, we propose to increase the budget there to allow for more lines to be replaced through that. The second piece is slightly different. This is work required for completing our inventory. By April 2027, we need to submit our final inventory to the Illinois EPA that will list out and quantify how many lead service lines that we have in the village. It's a time, it takes a lot of time to get the inventory done. So this includes some potential equipment rental and also consulting to help us remain eligible for any funding that might be available down the line. And then these other two programs. Sure.
What's our response rate on that now, Jack?
In terms of the surveys, we've gotten about 700 something responses in the survey, which is very good.
We still have a long way to go in the inventory because as helpful as the survey is, that only helps us know the private side of the service line. We still need to, through our own records or digging into the parkway, to find out what the public side material is. And then the basement protection subsidy program and the sewer lateral repair, those are ongoing projects that we make available to residents that want to participate.
Can you discuss those and just general?
I'll let Jack do that.
Yep.
You, oh, you got
No, it's okay.
Okay, so the basement protection subsidy program, that is generally considered our backflow prevention program or overhead sewer program. Residents who experience basement flooding or have an issue where they're, where they experience basement flooding, they come to us with what the actual issue is. We have a couple of methods that would solve that problem, either through a backflow prevention device or an overhead sewer. They come to us with what the problem is. We look at what potentially could resolve their problem. They apply for the program. We used to get a lot more of this, which obviously that's a good thing. A lot of people have taken advantage of the program in the past. Typically now we get one to two a year, which is a good thing. That means people are hopefully not experiencing it as bad. The other one that we have is the sewer lateral repair reimbursement program. That I would say we get maybe 3 to 4 a year. That is generally that is considered the replacement of the private sewer line from the curb to the main line. The village owns, operates, and maintains the main line sewer that's in the street. The homeowner is responsible for their own service line, including the connection. So our subsidy program pays for that portion, a portion of that portion of that cost within the street.
Got it. It would be great to be able to market those too, so people are aware.
Yes, we'll make sure to make a point from what that in our communications. That the funding's out there. All right. Moving on to the conclusion, we've got overview of the 5 years and the funding requirement for that. This allows us to prepare for the larger projects. And mentioned earlier, vehicles recommended for deferral. We have a couple vehicles here that have been deferred several years, and we'll continue to defer them as long as we can. And then same with equipment. See here, our stump grinder for Public Works was due for replacement 12 years ago, but it continues to work well. So we'll continue to defer it. Okay, the next steps, if there's any questions or feedback you have on this tonight or after tonight, as you think about it, please send those along to me and we can kind of discuss other ideas or priorities, or if there's any other questions that come up. Again, this will be brought back forward as part of the larger budget presentation in the spring. And at that time, we'll take more feedback and then also get formal board approval. But before I wrap up, I want to thank village staff for all their work on this, specifically Seth Jansen for coordinating and proofreading and making sure that this product is a useful document for the board and the residents, and also hopefully get especially recognized by GFOA.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just want to add before we leave this is that I want to make sure that maybe the staff considers, instead of contingent, recommend on those four items, because they're really more resident-facing issues that, you know, every time we talk to residents, traffic and safety seems to be the number one issue. So the striping, the traffic lights, those are, in my mind, shouldn't be contingent, should be recommended. And if we get grant money, even more the better. So that would be my recommendation, is to move those up since it's topic of most of our conversations.
Again, thanks. Okay,
cool. I have one more.
I noticed we had deferred the ventilation for the police firing range. I'm concerned about lead exposure for our officers, so I would encourage us not to defer again if that's at all possible.
So a lot of the, yes, point taken, absolutely. We don't want that to be a dangerous part of the reasoning for that deferral is because there's a lot of mechanical issues with the firing range, so there might be a larger scale project that needs to take place that we're still evaluating. So that's why that was considered. We've spent either last year or the year before that, there were some improvements made to the to that specifically for the ventilation system and kind of coordinating with our HVAC system to make sure that that's the most important thing in there more than the targets moving and all that. Yes, absolutely. We'll take that into consideration.
Okay. Great. Good work. Thank you so much. Look forward Thank to you. Seeing the budget. All right. Very good. Thanks, ma'am. All right. That kind of concludes our regularly scheduled meeting. So if I get a motion to enter into executive session in a second.
Move to enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ALCS 120/2C2 and 6 to discuss collective negotiating matters between the public body and its employees or their representatives or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees and to discuss the setting of a price for the sale or lease of property owned by the public body. And the village board will adjourn after executive session and will not return to open session.
You get a second?
Second.
All right, thanks. All right.
Trustee O'Connell? Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
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 Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Cascatello?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
And President Adjusi?
Yes.